Hello, it's Peter Wright and Kathleen Beauvais with another episode of The Yakking Show, The Harmony, Your Path to Wholeness channel. And the name of our channel is very apt for today's guest because he has a lot to say about traveling along a path, literally and figuratively. But first, let's introduce co-host Kathleen. Hi, Kathleen. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Peter. Thank you so much. And thank you also very much for tuning in to our show. We so appreciate having you. And as Peter mentioned, we have another special guest with us today. We are so privileged to welcome Dr. Rick Rimler, or Doc Rick, as he is known, to the show. Hello, Doc Rick. How are you?
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, guys. I appreciate your time.
So Doc Rick has been practicing podiatric medicine with an emphasis on foot biometrics for 30 years. He is a podiatrist in private practice in Hollywood, Florida, and Doc Rick's practice incorporates a holistic model that emphasizes a more natural way to treat foot problems. And today he's here to yak with us about treating feet the holistic way. So let's just jump right in. Doc Rick, tell us your philosophy and lifestyle protocol is to start with your feet. Can you explain why you think this way?
Sure. I wanted to get people and my patients, and now with the internet, you can reach so many people that they can really take control of their overall health by looking to their feet as a starting point. There are many, many studies that have been done talking about how if people are mobile, they will live longer. Mm-hmm. So there's one study that was interesting that stated that the speed that you can walk at the age of 50 will tell you, it's a predictor of how long you're going to live.
Really?
So just think about that. If you see two people crossing the street, mm-hmm. one person's very overweight, they can barely walk. The other person in good shape and are walking briskly. That actually, they've actually done studies related to that, even though intuitively you would make the prediction that the person walking faster would live long. But the studies actually support that, which is very mm-hmm. interesting. So that is how I ended up going from my traditional education where they spent all of 30 minutes on nutrition, for instance, in podiatry medical school. They spent 30 minutes on that.
Yeah.
I was motivated to find a better protocol. The first half of my practice, I was always uncomfortable with traditional treatments. Giving a cortisone injection may work, but people don't realize it causes tissue destruction in the area that you give it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then you have other factors that are even worse, such as taking, for instance, a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory for an arthritis pain can inadvertently cause a stomach ulcer and land you in the hospital. So during the first half of my career, I was always in the back of my head, I was uneasy with these treatments. So I then met my wife, who was dealing with a fibromyalgia diagnosis.
Okay.
When it was early on, when it just became a diagnosis, and they gave her five prescriptions and told her that she'd be on disability for the rest of her life, that she'd never
wow.
run again. And she said nothing doing. And she researched and changed her diet, changed her eating, went gluten-free, went dairy-free, went off every single supplement, one supplement, every single prescription, one at a time, brought in supplements and vitamins, started walking very slowly at a block at a time, increased it gradually. She was able to do that because she used the same principle she does in her career, which is a behavior analyst. She works with children that have autism.
Okay.
And you basically break things up into little pieces. And she did the same thing for herself. So while she was doing this, I had just met her. And she influenced me tremendously in my personal life to transform to a mm-hmm. holistic lifestyle. Then once I learned the way to do it personally, I said it would be a disservice to my patients not to do it also. So then I created my holistic podiatry model called Start With Your Feet. And it basically encompasses six main pillars: supportive shoes, orthotics, which are prescription arch supports, exercise, and the point that I like to make with exercise is my specific prescription for interval training, a 12-minute way to exercise and get more bang for your buck than if you spent an hour. Organic nutrition, preferably as much vegetarian as possible. Vitamins and supplements to treat problems rather than prescriptions. And then stress management. So taking that all together, starting with your feet. So that is what I was able to do. And that started in 2011. So I'm about 13 years into it now. And now I'm on a mission to really educate the world via the internet of just some basic things that they might not be aware of. Even when it comes to shoes, most people don't even know the right fit for a shoe. So I can go into more details later on, but that's basically in a nutshell what I'm about. And it's basically has to do with starting with your feet, getting your feet in comfortable shoes that are supportive, going the next extra mile by putting an arch support that's actually comfortable and does something to reduce motion so that you're walking around comfortably. Then you can take that same scenario and start to exercise, and not, and in a short version, the way that I propose is really going to reduce a lot of overuse injuries that comes with a 1 hour exercise or a marathon run, which we'll talk about later, the differences between a marathon runner and somebody that is a marathon walker. And I'll tell you which one I favor.
Well,
I'm
and I
sure.
have to tell
Sure.
you, Peter, I just have to jump in because
Sure.
I honestly, to be honest with you, I don't know how a pair of shoes should really feel, like a good fitting pair of shoes should
Right.
feel, because
Right.
I have small feet. I can't find shoes, women's shoes, to fit my feet. So I'm constantly flip-flopping in my shoes. I mean, they're just always too big. So
Yeah.
I don't even know what size I really am, to be honest.
Well,
So.
I can tell you very easily, and I all of my patients that come in, I do my exam on them. But when I'm done, the first thing I talk about is I look at the shoes they're wearing and I try to educate them on how to pick the right kind of shoes for the right circumstances. So if we're going to talk about just a regular walking shoe when we're out doing daily living activities or exercising, a couple of basic things that you want to know about is the part that's right behind the heel. It's called the counter. Here's my dad's shoe from 1932. This is the real shoe. I keep it in my office. This is called the counter, the back of the shoe. Most of the counters today are like this, where you can squeeze it. There's no control. But look at the counter here. It's made of it's so firm, and they don't make them like this anymore. But that's the first thing that you want. You want the back of the shoe to be firm. Then part two is a lace to push you back, or a Velcro rather than a loafer. So that's why, just right off the bat, most of my patients, they love to wear loafers because they look good, they're easy to get into, but you actually want to push your foot back. You want the part behind the heel to be firm. So that's the first part. The second part is try to get something where the insole can come out so that you can create more room if you need it, or even better, you can put a prescription arch support into the shoe to promote the stability from underneath in the back, middle, and front of the foot. I designed my own orthotic with that in mind, and I sell it online too. So you don't even have to be in Florida to get it. So that's the 1-2 punch. And then the capper is the one that I'd say 95% of my patients get wrong, the length of the shoe. They think that the longest toe has to be abutting the shoe. You need actually 1 inch from your longest toe, which may be your first, second, or third toe, to the end of the shoe. So it's roughly the width of a
Wow.
thumb.
Yep.
So going back to your shoes, Kathleen, they
Yes.
might be good. They might be good, but again, if you have that, if you have, for instance, if you have it very loose behind the heel, that's going to promote you to slide around. Some patients get extra
Sure.
wide or wide shoes. For some reason, the shoe companies make the heel wide when nobody has a wide heel. People usually have a regular or a narrow. So you don't want the heel in the back sliding around, but there are simple tricks to do if that were the case. So in your case, Kathleen, you were saying that you slide around a lot. Well, don't just do have about an inch from your longest toe to the end of the shoe. But if you're flipping and flopping in the back, even if it's a little loose behind the heel, you can just get some adhesive felt and put it under the tongue of the shoe. The tongue of the shoe is the part right under the lace,
Yep.
right over here. This is called the tongue. So you can stick adhesive felt under the tongue and you can push your foot back. You can make up for a wide heel that's giving you too much room in the back. Or you can actually counteract a counter that's not firm enough by shoving yourself into the back. So if you push yourself back far enough, you can't move, even though the counter might be a little loose. So those are like, that's just a little trick that people have no idea that they can do to
Sure.
improve the shoe, the subpar shoe that they're in. And then with some knowledge going to forward, when you go purchase the next shoe, that you'll get it right the next time you purchase that shoe.
Right, and you must hate stilettos.
No, I'm not a fan of stilettos because they're very dangerous, but I don't mind a heel. I prefer a square wedge, or even better, a platform where more of the foot is in touch with the ground. Try not to go more than 2 inch. And if you have any kind of heel, that same felt that you can put under the tongue, you can put right in the middle of the shoe in the arch. That will take a lot of pressure off the ball of the foot because when you have a heel, it's going to throw a lot more pressure on the front of the foot. So if you stick a speed bump in the middle, that's going to make every heel more comfortable in and of itself. Again, a very simple fix, but women have no idea that you can even do something like that and make even a heel more comfortable.
Absolutely. Peter?
Right. I got to ask you a quick one because we have an international audience and because of my British background. Am I correct in saying that the European term for podiatry is chiropody, or and someone in England would go to a chiropodist as opposed to a podiatrist, or are they not interchangeable?
I can talk to America. In America, the turn of the century in the early 2000s, early 1900s, it was called chiropody, but
Chiropody,
a lot of people called it chiropody.
okay.
But that degree changed. That you back in the 1920s and 30s, that profession of chiropody or chiropody was basically a vocation. It was a plumber, an electrician, right out of high school. You had a little bit of training. That degree evolved in the late 50s. In the mid to late 50s, it became a doctorate, where it was 4 years of college, 4 years of podiatric medical school, and now today it has evolved to 3 years of residency after that. So it's a full doctorate, but it's not an MD. It's like going to dental school. Four years of doctoral training, but with our own separate degree, it became Doctor of Podiatric Medicine, DPM.
Okay, no, that's good. Just wanted to clarify because, as I say, we have an international audience. So here's a tongue-in-cheek question for you, and you're going to criticize me later. That picture behind me is me running a 50-mile marathon. I did several of them, and my feet still work. So I want you to tell me how long I'm going to live. I'm 73, and I walk 2.6 miles in 39 minutes, carrying a 4-kilo backpack. Can you tell from that whether I'm going to live to 100 or not? It's tongue in cheek, I know, but just having a bit of
No,
fun here.
but I will say in general that I am not a fan of long distance running
I'm sure.
for a few main reasons. So let's start with you're going to really increase your chances of overuse injuries of your back, your hip, your knee, your ankle, your foot. So just for that alone. Now, also, believe it or not, long distance running causes your heart to actually be less efficient. So you get an enlarged heart from it, and it doesn't pump efficiently. So that's why instead, if somebody wants to spend an hour, okay, let's just say an hour, not talking about a marathon.
Right.
One hour, you have an hour on your hands. Much safer to do walking than running. It's going to be easier on your lower extremity, and you'll do benefit. And then if you can do a brisk walk, even better. But I like to say, for the people that don't have an hour and you just have a short period of time, which most people are working, going to school, they don't have that much time. You want to do interval training. So that's something a lot of personal trainers have heard about. They know about it. Most of the time, it's called high intensity interval training. I don't like to call it that anymore because I don't want people to be intimidated. So I want people to be able to, and I want to appeal to the person that's overweight that can barely walk, because I can tweak this whole prescription to the form and even the timing of it to everybody's medical ability.
Sure.
So that's the reason why I like to promote interval training, and we can talk about it later on if you want, but I wanted to answer your question that
I agree.
if you wanted to do your marathon one time, hats off to you, congratulations, but don't make a habit of it.
That's what my doctor said as well. And I haven't run for 30 years. As I say, I just walk briskly, five mornings a week now. But let's get on something else. What are the main issues concerning the feet that you see when people come to you for help?
One of the things that really appealed to me about podiatry was the fact that you have all medical specialties. You're just geographically limited in my case, in the state of Florida, to below the knee. So I can go all the way up to the knee, right up to the knee. I can't treat the knee, but I can treat the leg below the knee and the foot and the ankle. So you have vascular issues that I'm dealing with, poor circulation on the arterial end, which is a big challenge, of course. Every day I'm fighting to keep people out of the hospital. I don't want anybody to land in the hospital from related to the poor circulation effects on the foot. That's a big challenge. When you have diabetes, you have that even magnified. Then you also have on the venous end of the circulation, causing lots of swelling in the feet and legs. That causes problems. That causes phlebitis potentially in the legs. It can cause venous insufficiency and ulcerations in the legs that can cause cellulitis and hospitalizations. So that's the vascular end. Then we move to the neurologic end. Almost half of my patients have quote unquote neuropathy, which is a generalized term for the nerves not functioning. And you can get symptoms such as numbness, tingling, burning. But then it can progress to the point where it affects your sleep. It wakes you up out of your sleep. And the tail end of it affects your muscles where the muscles don't work. But also, you lose the ability to feel pain. So that's a test that I
Of
do.
course.
I do that on every patient. I want them to be able to feel pain, believe it or not, because then it alerts you that there's a problem. So if somebody has a numb foot, I'm going to ask them to have either themselves or their significant other or an aide or a neighbor check their feet every day, because they might not feel a problem. But if you see it, you see something suspicious, you get into the office rather than a month later, you're in the emergency room. That's a neurologic end. Then I'm going to look, of course, at the orthopedic end, the musculoskeletal. I'm going to look at the length of their legs. If they're symmetrical, if someone has a hip or a knee replacement, inherently there are a lot of times they're asymmetric, and I have a quick way to figure that out. And I tell them if I see there's a asymmetry, I let them know. I stick some pads in their shoes. They test it out. Next time they come back, they're either getting a heel lift or a heel lift incorporated into an arch support that I make for them. Then you have, of course, the foot type, which is a big thing for me. I created my own foot typing system. That was the reason why I got into podiatry, not to do surgery, but it was the biomechanics. It was d figure out the person's foot type, whether they have a flat foot or the opposite, which I call a hard foot, a foot that doesn't flatten. And then address that with the proper shoes, proper orthotics. Then you also have, let's say, bunions that make the foot wider, make the foot inefficient, causes a whole boatload of problems. All of these things I'm going to address on my initial exam, and I'm going to tell patients what to do. For instance, and where people think that they can only just get a wider shoe to help a bunion, or they have to get surgery. No, it becomes a form of arthritis, so you can treat it naturally with natural anti-inflammatories. But believe it or not, wearing a prescription orthotic will actually balance the foot. It will keep the bunion from progressing. So if somebody doesn't have a severe bunion, and even if they do, they can have the ability to get into a shoe that's wider, for instance, with an orthotic. There are a lot of non-surgical things that can be done for a bunion. And I need to, that's the reason. And then there's the dermatologic side. So there's all sorts of dermatologic things I deal with, including nails, fungus nails, ingrown toenails, and skin issues, dermatologic issues, athlete's foot, psoriasis, et cetera. So the whole gamut of medicine, radiology. I have a patient coming in tomorrow with a follow-up for a fractured foot. So they sent the x-rays to me. My office, I downsized a few years ago. I don't have x-rays in my office anymore. So I just have them get the x-rays out and they send them to me, or they put it on their phone. So I'm able to manage her fracture. She's coming in tomorrow. So all of these different things, all these medical specialties under the hat of a podiatrist.
So,
Wow.
would restless leg syndrome in part be caused by issues with the feet?
You might think so. You can get cramping in your legs related to, for instance, a flat foot. That's excessive motion can then cause some cramping in the legs, some muscle spasms. You can get severe muscle spasms related to flat foot. But restless leg syndrome is actually neurologic based. And so when someone has that, I'm usually going to go with, of course, everyone wants to be addressed biomechanically as far as the right shoe and the know what your foot type is, et cetera. But then I'm going to deal with that with the muscular side of it, which is using natural muscle relaxants such as tonic water and magnesium. And then if it's more than that, I'm going to recommend some neurologic ways to treat the restless leg. So that's usually neurologically based. So the muscular side and the neurologic side, and I address both holistically.
And I just have another quick question. When I'm exercising on the climber, and if I'm there just over maybe 40 minutes, sometimes I'm there an hour on this climber, but at the end of my workout, my feet, my toes are completely numb. I don't know if that's a function of footwear or just the repetitive. Again, maybe it's neurological, nothing to do with the feet. I don't know.
It could be both, but a lot of times the symptoms are showing in the foot, but a lot of times I find that it's coming from the lower back. People don't realize that the lower back supplies all of the nerves to the legs and feet. And most everybody has the beginnings of a problem in their lower back after the age of 40. Lower back issues and the cold and colds and flu are the number one reason why people miss work. It's a tremendous problem, a tremendous amount of disability going on with the lower back. So it could be the positioning of your climber, changing the tilt of your lower back, and then throw in a little bit of overuse. And there's a good chance it could be coming from the lower back, and there are varying levels. So you could have no symptoms at all in your lower back. You could have the symptoms in the feet. However, the source is the lower back. So you could have inflammation pushing on the nerve. That's the easy one. I always start by going for the inflammation reducer at the start of even a neurologic symptom, because if it's coming from soft tissue in the lower back, you can knock it out. Just as you can knock it out with Aleve and Advil with dangerous side effects, I can knock it out with natural anti-inflammatories, the right dose. And I could knock out those problems in 3 days a lot of times. If it progresses to a
Interesting.
disc, a herniated disc pushing on the nerve,
Right.
that's something physical. So in that case, the natural anti-inflammatory might help a little, but not enough. And then we need to really emphasize more of getting into the right foundation with an orthotic and shoe. But at that point, I'm going to recommend going to a chiropractor or a physiatrist or orthopedist to address the lower back. And then the furthest one is spinal stenosis, which is arthritis on the inside of the spinal column, and that's the bone pushing on the nerve. That has to be one of the hardest things that I have to deal with when someone has spinal stenosis, because the effects are on the feet. It's coming from a bone on the inside of the spine. I really do not like patients having to go get surgery, so that is a real challenge. But I try to do that in a non-surgical way as best as I can. And that's one where I will say that I'm trying to make new nerve cells and help you holistically. But if it's affecting your sleep and causing such burning, I'm going to say it's okay to take a prescription for that one to help with the symptoms. But hopefully down the line, you could start weaning yourself off the prescription, and then my nerve supplementation will have kicked in by then 6 months later, and then you're starting to get an improvement of your symptoms without having to go to surgery for that.
Okay, that's good. So, Doc Rick, you have a special brand of your own orthotics. How do they differ from the conventional stuff that people get from people who claim to be experts at modifying shoes or in the pharmacy? And I'm guilty of that. I had plantar fasciitis, so I went along and got some Dr. Scholl's little heel inserts, and they did seem to help. They honestly, they did. But how do your products differ from those?
Yeah, you can throw anything into the shoe, and sometimes you can hit it right, but you have to realize a plantar fasciitis is related to inflammation. So just throwing a device in the shoe will not get rid of inflammation. You still have to do things to get rid of inflammation, either locally and systemically. So you want to get that inflammation down. You want to the over-the-counter products are really, they call some of them even call them orthotics. An orthotic is actually a prescription arch support,
Sure.
but they really don't. The ones that are over-the-counter do not really have prescriptions, even though they might say they're orthotics. So I also wanted to make an orthotic that was more affordable for patients. Typically, if you go to a doctor, if you're not doing it in the store, let's go back to the store for a second. A lot of times they'll have a kiosk for Dr. Scholl where you step on a mat. It
Yes,
takes
I've
a
seen that.
footprint. So it takes
Yeah.
the footprint. It then tries to decipher what your foot type is. I can tell you that when I do my exam and I look at the footprint of the patient from the side, and I can get a general idea of the arch height. Then I look at them from behind, I can actually see what's going on. It doesn't always correspond. So those machines, of course, they're machines. There's an art to medicine, and I bring the art into it besides the science. It's not just cookbook. So there's an art to it.
Right.
So you want to address the back, middle, and front of the foot. I wanted to do something that was much more affordable, which I do in my office, and I also wanted to make it available to people that weren't geographically in South Florida. So I was able to come up with my own biomechanical theories over the years, test them out on my patients, because that's what medicine is. You're in practice in medicine, so I'm practicing. I took a leap of faith after going to a lecture at a seminar, and I changed the way that I approached the biomechanics in one aspect of it, and I just like said, let's see if it works. And it's like, basically, the patient was a guinea pig, but I wasn't doing anything that was going to cause harm. I was just, and then I get the follow-up and I'm going, thumbs up. Yeah. Okay. So then I was able to move on in that direction. And then that helped me develop my theories for biomechanics. But the number one thing that I want to say is you have to take the whole person into account. So I'll give you an example. If somebody has a very flat foot, you're just tunnel visioning on the foot. So you're going to, the typical provider, and now It's not just podiatrists giving orthotics now, it's physical therapists, it's chiropractors, it's other specialties. You would give a hard orthotic for a flat foot, but what happens if that same patient has a bad back and they have a disc problem and they have symptoms? Well, guess what? If you put that hard orthotic in that person, they're not going to be able to wear it. So you can have the best prescription in the world. If the material is wrong, the patient won't wear it. They can't use it. So the first thing was comfort. That was the first thing in my mind. I found a lab to work with. I told them, this is my vision. This is how I want to do it in the office. And I want to be able to make this available online where I'm not examining the patient. So comfort was one. Stability in the back, middle, and front of the foot. You have to control motion. And affordability. Those were the whole things that came together. And this is years in the making. I'm about 8 years or so, if not longer, 10 years of my orthotics being out on my patients and having feedback. And I can tell you overwhelmingly great results. I just had to call two patients today, 1 month after dispensing their orthotics. I always call them a month later. And both of them, big thumbs up on both. And that's usually what I get. I get very few problems related to them because I'm trying to do it right the first time with something that's comfortable, but it's also doing something. I just had a patient who came back this week from a year ago. I go, "What happened? Did your problem come back?" "Oh no, I'm doing great. My feet are great. The orthotics are great. I just need a letter from work to say that I can wear sneakers so I can wear your orthotics at work." That's what she came in for.
Wow.
So overall,
Wow, very good.
that's my big thing in designing this orthotic. And I have to tell you that even the podiatry so-called foot experts, I'm very disappointed in what I'm seeing, where I have a 90-year-old lady. Yeah, she has a fairly flat foot. And she's showing me the orthotic that her podiatrist prior to me made for her. And I'm going, "Oh my God, this is an orthotic for a 20-year-old, not a 90-year-old." And she goes, "It's not comfortable." Of course, it's not comfortable. It's too hard. So it's like I call it the yin and yang of of biomechanics. If you have a hard foot, you need something soft under it. If you have a flatter foot, you need something firmer under it, but not so firm that it's a piece of metal that's not forgiving, that you would give to a 20-year-old.
Right. Well, now, Doc Rick, we're running short on time here, but we do have a question because you mentioned your 12-minute interval training. Can you just give us a little bit more on that, so that we can wrap up?
Interval training is the number one message that I like to tell people, besides telling people also that there are safer ways to treat your medical problems that the medical doctors might not be aware of, or they might poo-poo it. So, interval training. So, I got this from a doctor, an anti-aging doctor, found out about it when I was 50. I've been doing it Monday through Friday, 5 days a week since I was 50. I'm 63 now. So, I know it works because I'm healthier now than when I was 50, based on my blood work and everything else. So, basically, it's a 12-minute form of exercise. And in a nutshell, you go fast for 20 seconds, whether that's a fast walk or a jog or a fast bicycle pedal or a fast swim. You can do it so many different ways. Fast for 20 seconds, as long as you're medically cleared to do that. And then right after that, 1 minute of slow recovery. So in my case, I go on my street, I sprint for 20 seconds, I walk for a minute, catch my breath, turn around and go the other way. So basically, it's about six intervals at 20 seconds with a rest after each one. The final three are 15 seconds fast and a minute slow after each one. The 15-second ones must be done faster, and then you'll get the real physiologic effect. So the whole key is at the end, you're going a shorter time, but you go faster. So, and then you can tweak all of that according to your fitness level. You don't have to do 20. If you can't do 20, you can do 15. You just have to add the fast intervals up to 2 minutes. So the fast intervals have to be 2 minutes, which doesn't take that many intervals. Go faster at the end. So what are the benefits of doing this? Well, first of all, it's fast, so you can get it in before work and school. It's going to increase your lung capacity, which is the number one indicator of longevity. It's going to increase the effectiveness of your heart, the opposite of a marathon runner. It's going to increase oxygenation all over your body by the change of speeds. So you're going to root out inflammation, and you're also going to get it to the brain, and you're going to cut down your chances of Alzheimer's by oxygenating up there too. It's going to go into a 12-hour afterburn of fat. So you won't burn fat during the workout because you're not going 25 minutes. But you'll go into a 12-hour afterburn of fat after your workout. So as long as you're eating a diet sensibly with not too much white flour in it, and as long as your hormones check out, you should be able to lose weight or stay fit in that range. You'll also increase your endorphin release as if you had run the runner's buzz. You'll release some endorphins. You'll have nice stress management as if you had run for an hour in that short burst, because you're going to get the endorphins going that way also. So you'll feel nice and relaxed and calm and ready to start your day. I call it Teflon coated to start your day. So stress will bounce off of you like Superman. And then the final thing is it's anti-aging. This technique is keeps your chromosomes long. If your chromosomes stay long, you do not age as fast. And so I'm proof of it.
Wonderful.
I started when I was 50. I'm 63
Wow.
now. I'm continuing to do it, and I'm continuing to spread that message to people to not be intimidated by having to do it for too long or too intense. It doesn't have to be too intense. You just have to change the speeds. It could be a fast walk and a slow walk. I have patients that are in wheelchairs. I tell them to get a floor pedal. Pedal fast for 20 seconds. And of course, if you can't do 20, do 15. Just add them up, add up, make sure your fasts are 20 or 2 minutes long when you finish. That's the
Great.
key. And there's studies to back it.
Wonderful. Wow.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
My internet is giving trouble, Kathleen.
Okay.
Do
All
you,
right.
I'm going to have to leave it to you.
All right. Well, my goodness, we are out of time for today, but please tell us how people can contact you.
Okay, so I have a website, startwithyourfeet.com. In the process of going to be rebranding soon. Anyone can send me an email, docrick@startwithyourfeet.com. I have a website dedicated to my orthotics, which I sell online, docricksorthotics.com. That's a landing page where you can get all the information you need on one page and not have to go through different tabs on a website. It has patient testimonials on it, has an infomercial on it to get more information to see the benefit of an orthotic. And then I also have my own podcast that I started up last year called Holistic Strides, which I put out twice a month. It's on audio, on video, on YouTube. You can see it, you can hear it on Spotify, on Apple, Buzz, all of those different things. So you can see me on a lot of different venues.
Wonderful. And Peter, you will put those in the captions right below this video.
If you can hear me, yes, they will all be in the description.
We can hear you. All right.
I
Well,
wasn't sure. They'll be on the video. They'll be in the descriptions. Yep.
okay. Well, thank you so much, Doc Rick,
So,
for being with us today. We really appreciated having you. And thank you all once again for tuning into our show. If anyone is interested in being a guest on our show, we invite you to visit us at theyakingshow.com. All you need to do is click on the Contacts tab where you will find a short application form, and we'd love to hear from you. So until next time, take care, everyone. Bye-bye.